Good evening and welcome to our NPR Illinois Forum series, Election 2018, Seeking Solutions. A series produced by NPR Illinois, supported by AARP. I'm Sean Crawford, NPR Illinois News Director, also host of a show and a podcast called State Week, where we look at state government. Tonight's program is a partnership with WSIU, and we are in Carbondale at the Varsity Center for the Arts. We're glad you could come out tonight, and we also welcome those of you who are listening on the air and through social media. We're traveling across Illinois this year. We want to hear how voters like yourselves feel about the various issues facing the state. And tonight we are focused on not only the state's fiscal health, but also what we're calling local access, and that is access to education, health care, economic opportunity. And for many, those are out of reach, especially in southern Illinois. What are the problems? What are some ideas to solve them? Can the state do more to help? What do those running for office this election need to understand? We want to hear from you, and we've asked you to submit questions or comments. We have some people in the back with some cards, and you can fill those out. And if I call on you, we'd like for you to step to the mic and ask your question to the panel. And we do have a great panel tonight, which will help guide the discussion. I'm going to let them introduce themselves, and let's start right here next to me.
My name is Matt Donkin. I am the superintendent of schools of Frankfort Community Unit School District 168 in West Frankfort, Illinois. I'm a former teacher and coach and a building administrator. I served 10 years as regional superintendent of schools for Franklin Williamson and the last term for Johnston Massac counties as well. I've worked also with Delta Regional Authority and a member of the Southern Illinois Workforce Development Board, all kinds of different entities that tie together trying to make sure that Southern Illinois and the people here, one, have a chance for a good education and then a chance to have access to these things to have a better life going forward.
I'm John Jackson from the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute. I am also a political science professor emeritus and both longtime administrator and faculty member at SIU.
Jennifer Olson, President and CEO of Carbondale Chamber of Commerce. Also on the advisory board for the management school at the College of Business at SIU. And I am chairperson of the Regional Advisory Council to the Delta Leadership Network of the Delta Regional Authority.
I'm Kyle Harfst, Executive Director of Economic Development, Southern Illinois University, Carbondale. I also serve as Executive Director of SIU Research Park. Most of our work is actually done out in the region, not necessarily inside the confines of the campus, where we work with communities on strategic planning, as well as startup businesses and businesses that have been around for decades.
So we have a panel tonight that has some different backgrounds, but they know this region well. And I'm going to start by throwing out a question that all of you can answer if you want to start here again next to me, Matt. The term access. Your view on access to the things we talked about earlier, education, healthcare, jobs, in this region, what do you see as some of the, maybe the barriers that people face and some of the things that are being done possibly to correct those?
Well, in this area, we always have had to work against the size of the population, the distances we cover, and how to get access to things and make them economically feasible, from education and healthcare and all of these different things. And yet, if you're going to have a good life, you need access to those things. As a country, that's what we came together for, to give people a chance to do something better and improve themselves. That's why a lot of us got into education, for that being the first step to that. And then trying to tie all of those areas together. Everybody can fall easily into the trap of working in their own little silo in their own little area. It's trying to work across things regionally to do things, where a city might be covering some of the same population or mileage. It's sometimes a little more difficult in an area where you have smaller towns, getting those places to work together.
I grew up in this area. Let me just stay on that for a minute, because you're talking about access to education. I felt as though I got a pretty good education, although my school district was certainly not wealthy and not in comparison to some other places in the state. So does the term access apply to kids going to school, especially K through 12? Are they able to come away with a solid enough education to continue their studies onward?
we like to think we do. We certainly strive hard to make sure we do. On the other hand, the size of the districts and then funding levels, which was part of what drove the evidence-based formula last year, where if we want to treat all of Illinois' children the same and give them all access, then we have to have the schools, we have to have the instructors, the teachers, other things to make that happen. We're seeing now with, because of several factors over the past several years, from increasing requirements and issues on the economic side, where not as many people have gotten an education. Okay, then kids come to school. Do we have teachers to cover all the subjects? And I guess your other option is, well, you have one big school with long driving times, or you just put everything online and let entities that may be out to make money do that kind of thing. But I think all of us remember and think that the individual teacher we work with, the member of the community, that was part of encouraging a community as well, which you see every day in Southern Illinois as people work with each other to make things better.
Professor Jackson, let me move on to you. Your thoughts on access in this region. What are some of the things that you think are a concern and maybe some things that can be done to improve those?
Well, SIU was built on the concept of access. We were sort of a people's university in the sense that we were accessible. We were the place that working class and middle class parents could send students and they could get an education, a very good education at a very reasonable price. And access has always been in our tradition from really the founding and certainly through the 50s and 60s in the so-called Morris era. The budget impasse and the lingering effect of that budget has been really devastating to higher education in this state. I include universities as well as community colleges. We went for 2 years, as you know, without a budget. We got two stop gaps that gave us 42% of the base when we finally got them. That means we lost 58% of the base. No big organization can lose 58% of its base. One of the immediate impacts, as you know, was the state did not fund MAP grants. And that was tragic for SIU, for John A. Logan, for really all the publics in the state, because so many, a large percentage at SIU, depend on MAP grants. It wreaked havoc with planning for the parents and the students and for each of the universities. Most of us tried to replace, as did SIU, those MAP grant funds with internal funds, but we were already struggling with what we had lost and we had to replace those MAP grants for 2 years. Another impact, both this exacerbated what had been a long-term trend, which as many of you know, we lost steadily state support out of the general revenue fund, we steadily increased tuition. We have more than doubled tuition in the last 10 years, and we're not alone in that. Most state universities have done that. We have all made it much more expensive to go to school in Illinois. Illinois students are getting the message, have been getting the message since about 2000. When I used to study these figures regularly, we were the second greatest exporter of Illinois high school students to other states at 22%, exceeded only by New Jersey. We are now at 47% of high school students going out of state as soon as they graduate high school. We're losing almost one in two of high school graduates, and that's because of access. And it's really the exporting of a human treasure, a human resource that can't be replaced.
I'm going to come back to SIU. We'll talk about that more in a little bit, but let's continue on the access discussion here. Jennifer Olson with the Carbondale Chamber of Commerce.
I kind of like the theme that our sponsor has chosen in Enough is Enough. And I would say Enough is Enough applies to the number of people leaving this state every year. In 2017, it was 33,703. And the year before, 37,508. And so what can we do? And I think these improvements to accessing these three key topics is a very good step in the right direction. It's interesting, I think, of access in healthcare is very literal, and that's transportation. Transportation is the huge issue here. And, you know, when you couple that with unemployment, poverty, food insecurity, and other financial barriers, it's a recipe for underservice. Also, as much as we love all of our wonderful restaurants and hotels and retail, what we need is livable wage jobs that offer insurance or that allow people to be able to have the means to purchase their own insurance. So that's one issue of healthcare. In education, the gentleman to my right really talked about K through college. I like to talk about K through J being job. And that is part of that economic opportunity that we talk about getting access to. So I like the ideas around growing mentorship and apprenticeship. Teaching entrepreneurship, I think, is huge. I think that a lot of young people don't even realize that's a career path. And here we certainly have, as many parts of the state, a high demand for trades and people who are trained in those fields. So yes, a four-year degree is right for many people, but there's other options, including buying out one of the 70% of retiring baby boomers who have a successful business that needs a new owner. So there's other things that we can do to get access to economic opportunity, and I think that transitions right out of education. And in the world of economic opportunity and tying back to people leaving the state, I think sometimes we're just our own worst enemy because all we want to do is tell the negative stories. And we need to be talking about the businesses that have had success here and what was their secret and how do we duplicate that moving forward.
Okay. Kyle?
One of the definitions of economic development I like is improving the quality of life in one's community, one's region, however you want to frame that. So when we're looking at that, it drills down to, you know, a good paying job, nice education, and so on and so forth. But a skilled workforce is at the top of the list, I think, in terms of many, many vocations. I know manufacturers in Illinois, and specifically Southern Illinois, it's their number one tick, if you will. In terms of skilled workforce, that includes not only technical skills, but also soft skills. The technical skills, do they know how to run that CNC machine? Soft skills, do they know how to do teamwork or communicate with their fellow employees?
I think people from other parts of Illinois who don't know Southern Illinois tend to think of it as coal mining, and they don't think of much else, truthfully. And they think, oh, the coal mines have closed down. Well, manufacturing has been a big loss in this area as well, and yet I don't know what has replaced those jobs, if anything. And I don't want to call it low-skilled work, but work that maybe doesn't require certainly a four-year degree. Maybe you go to trade school and you learn some type of craft. Are there enough jobs for these people once they do it?
Well, right now the data says that the unemployment rate is about 5%, which means that finding skilled employees is a challenge. But it doesn't talk about the number of employees who've gone out of the search for the job market, and then also the poverty rate. When you're looking at the southern 20 counties in Illinois, I think the low end is Randolph County at about 13%, and the higher end would be Alexander, about 33%. So as was indicated earlier, people may be having jobs, but they may be underemployed, whether they have a part-time job or several part-time jobs, and it's a big issue here.
And unemployment across the state, I believe, is around, what, 5% right now?
Right, so, not quite 5.
So, again, we do have cards. If anybody would like to ask a question, we'd ask, and we do have a couple of people here, I think, who have some of those. So we'll get those picked up, and hopefully we'll get you up to the microphone in a moment. I do want to go back, and Matt, I'm going to, since we started with you, I'll go back to education. You sort of touched on it there. I think people from outside the area think, hey, there aren't as many people there. In Southern Illinois, there are schools that are struggling. So why not just have consolidation? Just consolidate all the schools, consolidate maybe local governments, do a lot of that type of thing. That will solve some of the problem. I know it's been done in this area. There has been a lot of consolidation, but Is that something that you see going forward is going to happen, more of that?
It has happened over the years, and I mentioned with the Regional Office of Education, I was a part of that as well. Of course, as you consolidate, you bring other factors in from transportation to access to less of a feeling of community and those kind of things that that help the base out. Kind of thinking along here, if you are from this area, as we are, and you go to school, do what you're supposed to do, get your education, K-12, hopefully go on either to a trade school or job or to John A. Logan, SIU, the community colleges in the area, and you want to give back, then what is the incentive to stay here except maybe that feeling of community and some of those advantages? And yet, for example, in education, one of the things you need is teachers, and they have to have their degree. If you take an average of a bachelor's degree pay right now, that's in the neighborhood of $50,000 to $60,000, that's not where you start out as educators. We talked a little bit about there was an idea of increasing how many university students now go out of the state. Well, part of the way the state tried to address that was we need to make our places high quality, up the standards. Okay, we did that in education. We upped the standards. We made it harder to become educators. We also, on the back end, have changed some of the incentives you might have to work for a little less, like the pension, like the years that you would work. That's not there either, and it's playing into, again, I realize teaching and public education are taxpayer-supported jobs because the community thinks that's important, and it does, but who's going to stay and do those jobs if you can go other places? And that's part of also why people are leaving the state. It's that access to opportunity, and at times just getting discouraged. We work and work and work. We make do. Where's some kind of tangible success to want to stay and be a part of the solutions?
Let me call a couple of, maybe at least one person up to the microphone here. Ted Gutierrez, Carbondale, could you step to the mic and ask your question? He's way in the back, so I'll give him just a moment here. And Professor Jackson, did you want to weigh in on that as well when we're talking about school consolidation?
I'll leave that to Matt.
You will leave that to him. All right. We'll let that one be. Go right ahead, sir, and ask your question.
Sure. Thank you for doing this panel tonight. My question was, what do you all think about the University of Illinois' recent decision to offer free tuition to students who qualify based on, I think it was a 61,000 medium household income, and why do you think they're able to do that? And when you look at other public universities, when they tend to raise tuition year after year, and the University of Illinois can do that, what do y'all think? How's that going to affect students staying in the state?
John, you want to answer?
Well,
that
probably is mine. Couple of things. One is it's a fairly narrow definition of who qualifies, as I've read it. And number two, they said their number one objective was to increase their diversity. We haven't had the diversity problems that they've had. We were founded on the idea of diversity. We were never segregated, for example. We've always had an incredible mixture of people from across the country and around the world. So we haven't quite encountered that particular problem to the extent they have and did. I'm pretty sure they didn't go through any vetting with the other universities. University of Illinois tends to do things that way. And it's going to be tough for the rest of us to compete with that, because when we got a budget this last year, we got 90% of the original FY2015 base. So we still lost 10% of that base. And we had to pay back some of that money that we borrowed during that two-year crisis. And I suspect every other university outside of U of I is in the same circumstance. So it's going to be tough for us to match that. I'm not at all clear what the other universities will be doing on that front.
And of course, I think SIU's some problems or concerns around here regarding the future of the institution have been well known. From a Carbondale Chamber of Commerce standpoint, is that concerning? Has that been an issue among your members as far as the future of SIU?
Oh, certainly. We talk all the time about the impact of dollars from governmental sources, from dollars that come here in the pockets of students and their parents. It is a huge impact. And the other thing that people don't always recognize when we talk about, you know, declining enrollment or less money to this university, maybe money going elsewhere, for example, is people are quick to think about professors and faculty, but there's also a lot of people who do business with the university. And even if they're not a direct contractor, if you will, they probably buy supplies or use services of other businesses in town, and it is a huge ripple effect. So even if somebody is not a registered vendor or a faculty, you know, that we have all these administrative folks plus the ripple out to the small businesses that's impacted.
And Kyle, can you talk also about SIU's role in the overall economy here, what it means for business, for people who maybe have nothing to do with the university directly?
Sure. SIU is the largest employer in the region. The last economic impact study that was done was, I think, on the state, the impact was $2.3 billion annually. Mm-hmm. Just in the southern 23 counties, it was somewhere shy of $900 million annually. And in terms of a student, what's that mean per student? Well, at that point in time for the region, that value was $42,000 a student. So if you do the math, that gives you an idea on the impact for the region.
Quick number. Our overall budget, not the state budget, but total budget, last time I checked, was about $405 million a year. Think about a factory leaving town or a combination of economic hits on an economy that took $405 million out. So that'll give you some idea of the ripple effect that we have on this area. And there have been lots of studies. Kyle's shop has done some of those studies of how much that impact is not only Carbondale and Jackson County, but counties all through southern Illinois and central Illinois.
You mentioned the AARP, the enough is enough. And I think, and I watched this in a consolidation fight, actually, which is ultimately a local decision. And I watched the people in the room. One community was for it, one was against it. And they were willing to pay more to keep what they had because they saw the value in it. Even as enough is enough, I think as this state, as any of us, have to pay our bills, be conscious of what we're spending, but people would be willing to do that if they saw the value they were getting back and didn't feel like it was going somewhere else. Of course, that's always the thing, it's going somewhere else. Somebody's got a better deal than I do, how can I get that? And how we overcome that feeling across the state.
Can you talk briefly about the law, which you referenced earlier, that was passed? It's an effort to try to bring a bit more state aid to school districts that maybe don't quite have as much, I guess would be a good way to say it, the haves and the have-nots of school districts. It's a way to try to shift a bit more money there. But this is a long-term process under this law. What would it mean for at least your school district? What do you think about it overall, too?
The evidence-based funding system goes back to an issue we have, which is we support education by property taxes. And depending on what kind of property wealth you have, you might be able to do more. You can spend more per student. You can give them more opportunities, maybe higher credentialed teachers. That's a problem between Collar Counties, Chicago, and downstate, and pockets in all kinds of regions. We even see it here from as the school facility sales tax started in Williamson County, actually was the first county that passed it. You get a little bit into have and have not counties. The evidence-based funding formula is trying to equal that, which is what the past state funding formula was supposed to do, but it was kind of based on they threw a number at the wall, and that's what they were trying to meet up with. The evidence-based formula is tying in not just getting money to schools that don't have as much local support, but also trying to tie that to some performance as well, and giving the schools a chance to work on things that will improve that they have seen, as opposed to a top-down, you need to do this, this will fix your school. And over time, over the next few years, hopefully bring lower performing schools up, but also help with the funding across the board. Is that real popular in districts that have a higher property value? And probably not, because they're sending, in their mind, more money to places like this. Mm-hmm. For Southern Illinois, it's a pretty good deal. We figured out a way to get more funds from places that have it to places that are in need.
And it will take a while before this really starts to show up, though, in the way that's really going to matter.
Despite the fact that some legislators were asking 2 months after it passed, how come your scores aren't up more? Yes, it is rolling out, but a commitment over time. We didn't get here in a year. We're not going to get out of this in a year.
Okay. Let me call on another audience member, Sabrina Hardenberg from Carbondale. If Sabrina... also in the back there, so we'll let her make her way up here. I think she has a question, and she can ask her question, and any of you that feel free to, or feel, can feel free to answer that. Go right ahead.
It's been two. Which are you looking at?
Well, I will say this one, I believe you talked about a progressive tax.
Okay.
But feel free to ask both if you'd like. So.
Okay. Given the budget problem, different solutions have been proposed, one progressive tax, another a LaSalle Street tax on people's investments. What are your positions on that to try to alleviate the really high property taxes here that are partially elevated by industry not paying that much tax? For instance, the coal industry pays very little and then damages our roads. We have to somehow come up with money to pay for the roads and our schools that we're talking about in the last few questions.
And the progressive tax, for those that don't know, would basically take away Illinois' flat tax, which we have now, and would set certain income guidelines and tax people at a different rate based on how much they make. Kyle or John, I don't know, that might fall more to you, if either one, if you'd like to weigh in.
Well, I think there's a lot to be said philosophically for a progressive income tax. Evidence for that is almost all states that have an income tax have some form of at least modified progressive tax. I think only two or three are flat like we are. Secondly, though, it's not really a solution at all for the next two, 3, or 4 years because it is so complicated. It's got to get through the legislature, get on the ballot, be passed by the people, and then be implemented. And we're talking FY 21 or 22 by then.
It's a constitutional change would have to happen.
It's a constitutional change required because flat tax was written into the Constitution. That's my point number one. Point number two is what we really need to do is to broaden the base of the tax system. The base of the tax system was built on a 19th century economy, and we now have a 21st century economy. The sales tax is built on sales tax on services, not on services, well, to a modest extent on services. That is 17 categories of services are taxed in Illinois. The average is 47 across the nation, and some total comes up to well over 100 taxes on services in other states. That would be by far a better way of doing it. It's going to be tough politically because it's easy to caricature it. But nevertheless, if it's not a tax on services, somehow or another, we have to broaden the base. And the base is way too narrow, way too much built on an economy that no longer exists.
Kyle, you work with economic development.
Right.
It seems like a lot of businesses might not be too excited about changes to the tax rates, to the tax structure in the state of Illinois. So could this just drive more business out of Illinois?
There's that potential. But again, I would agree with what Dr. Jackson said. There's no one easy solution, and there's several different revenue streams coming in. And from my perspective, you know, progressive income tax rate is a good idea, but it'll take time. And also, it's a fairly volatile way of collecting taxes. Jennifer talked about the out-migration of Illinoisans. So, you know, I don't know what type of studies have been done on that, but I'm certain it's not going to be the lower income level. It's probably going to be the moderate to upper income level people who are moving away. So you're going to have to deal with that issue as well.
So for those of you who don't know, Illinois lost more people last year, I believe it was, than any other state. So that is a concern going forward. Did you have another question you wanted to ask?
The other question on the other sheet of paper asked, given AARP is one of the sponsors here and tends to advocate for our Social Security and Medicare existence, what is your position on single-payer health care, also called Medicare for All? In Congress, one of the early bills was H.R. 676, but Illinois also had a similar counterpart up in Springfield.
Whoever wants, anybody want to respond to that or have an opinion on that?
I'll respond, but maybe not directly to
okay.
it. One of the things we talked about was access to health care. And so, you know, are we a believer that everybody deserves health care? You know, that's a pretty philosophical question. And if the answer is that yes, who pays? Well, if you have insurance through your employer or Medicaid, Medicare, whatever, that's a relatively simple answer. But what about those individuals who don't? You know, the Affordable Care Act, or otherwise known as Obamacare, with all of its problems, it's been able to get some people, you know, on with health care insurance who didn't have it before. That goes away, and if there's no other provisions, I think there's 50,000 people who lose health insurance in Southern Illinois overnight. So that's something we have to deal with as well.
We're going to ask another audience member had another question to come up. Kathleen, I believe I have this right, Scheffner, I hope I got your name right. And while she's coming up, I just want to remind you, you are listening to our latest NPR Illinois Forum Series Election 2018, Seeking Solutions. We're in Carbondale tonight, and I'm Sean Crawford, joined alongside by Kyle Harfst, the Executive Director of the Office of Economic and Regional Development at SIU. We also have Matt Donkin, Superintendent of West Frankfort Schools, Jennifer Olson, President and CEO of the Carbondale Chamber of Commerce, and Professor John Jackson of SIU and the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute. Go right ahead.
I have to say, I wasn't here for the beginning, and I just read this on Facebook that you were here tonight, so I ran in. And it's not so much a question as it's an idea. And it's like, why doesn't SIU get radical again? We had Bucky Fuller here, who showed us how to make housing for people with very little money, no matter where they lived, accessible and easy. And also, why don't we become green and let go of corporate America and have no more funding anymore from Monsanto, and not poison our water and poison our food and poison the air? Why don't we have real bike trails where you don't have to ride your bike where there's cars? Because I don't get another chance if I ride my bike and somebody hits me with a car. I would love to ride my bike. So there's three things I just threw at you. But those are all really good ideas, and I know they will take time, but what if we did that? What if we said, we're going to be radical, we're going to make it beautiful again and fun. We're going to not only work, but we're going to have fun while we do it. So not everybody's going to be inside. Some of us are going to be outside, and we'll take turns.
So is that a way to maybe turn things around at SIU, get a little more radical?
Well, I don't accept total premise. That is, we are one of the more innovative places around. We have a whole focus on innovation. Kyle's got some of it down there where he is. We've been one of the most innovative universities in the country throughout our history. We have an aviation program, we have an automotive program, we have mortuary science, we have health sciences, radiology, PAs, and so forth that almost no other four-year university has ever had. We haven't ceased to be innovative and creative throughout our entire history. I'm not an expert on sustainability, but we do have a sustainability center out there, and they are, I think, particularly with very enthusiastic student help, doing a lot of really neat things. On the bike trails, SIU certainly is in favor of that, but we don't, I have to leave that to the city and the county and other people who build more roads than we do.
Go ahead.
There's this whole new coming in education. It's online. It's available to people. And it's a complete switch of thinking about our health and how we are in charge of our health. So there's a responsibility to the human being as well. You can't just go to somebody and say, I'm ill, and then blame them if you don't get better. So that's something that, is it called education? It would be lovely if we started coming into all the different ideas that it takes to be well. It's spiritual, and it's mental, and it's emotional, and it's physical. And I don't see that happening fast enough. And I'm hoping we can put that into our institutions, because we have to change. We have to put love and compassion there.
If I can respond to your 3 points from earlier, sustainability, as Dr. Jackson indicated, we do have a very progressive sustainability program on campus. If you go to sustainability.siu.edu, you'll be able to find out a lot of the wonderful things. In terms of bike trail development, that's actually not a new idea. In 1998, there was a project that was finished. I was project manager with the Department of Natural Resources, and we developed a comprehensive bike trail plan for the entire region and subsequently county by county. And what we found, why the university was ready, the region was not at that point in time. Since then, we've had some progress. So Illinois Department of Transportation, every time they work on a project, they ask, is this something a part of the bike trail plan? Or even more proactively, they'll put in bike trail lanes. Obviously, that does not replace a separated trail, but I think it's a step in the right direction.
Thank you. All right, thank you, and thanks for the Buckminster Fuller reference, too. I was hoping we'd get one. Let me move along, and Jennifer, I'm going to go to you. We're talking about the Carbondale Chamber of Commerce. You know, it's your job to work with business, support the business here, hopefully maybe even attract business in some cases. I view Carbondale, I've always viewed it as different than a lot of Southern Illinois. I view this as almost the big city in compared to some of Southern Illinois, so I don't feel, at least from my perspective, like it has some of the problems that some other towns around here do. And certainly it has more retail and certainly more business, I think. But it does have issues and it does have problems, I would think, in trying to keep those. What are some of those that you face the most when it comes to talking to business, trying to keep them here?
Well, we do have some very natural built-in turnover because of the university and students passing through. Also, we're a huge healthcare center, which is positive in that it makes us a great place to retire. But it does contribute sometimes to the turnover in that there's a lot of programming around getting doctors, especially specialists, in to serve in rural and underserved markets. But most of those agreements are 3 and 5 year agreements. So those folks, many times, if we haven't managed to land their loyalty, or are gone at the end of 3 or 5 years. So we do have a turnover. But I think we as a city do have a more of an urban feel and a little bit more of a melting pot, and are certainly more diverse than some of our surrounding towns that don't have the turnover or change. So I would hate to lose some of that character, because I do think it contributes to lifestyle and more unique offerings. The other thing that we're really good at here in Carbondale is supporting our local business and our local efforts. I can go to neighboring towns and you'll have to stand in line if you want to eat at a chain, but if you want to eat local, you can walk right in. And I think we're pretty much in the opposite boat, and that's a good problem to have. Also, it allows us to sustain some of our businesses that have been here 20 and 30 and 40 years, so that when our alumni return for the big events, they can go to all their favorites that they remember back from college.
Matt, just to follow up on that, a lot of people may not realize the diversity of when it comes to towns in Illinois, or Southern Illinois, excuse me. And I mean diversity in the sense of economic opportunity, things of that sort. You're, I believe, a native of the West Frankfort area, correct? So, to me, growing up where I did in Williamson County, it is a lot different. It's not far from Carbondale, but it is feeling at times like it's a world away.
It is, and working across the four counties that I had, you can, each town has a different personality, and it's not just based on a mascot or a school color, but there are different personalities in the towns. Carbondale did seem like the big city when we were young. That's where you went to go to the mall. That's where more of the culture and activities were. Mm-hmm. And as Dr. Jackson referenced, Dr. Morris's term, where SIU in the 50s and 60s was branching out and trying to help, and when public broadcasting and the other, and agriculture and the other things the university did, I don't know if there was a somewhere in that period of time where folks felt like the university was telling more than listening, which is always something, even as teachers, we've got to make sure we listen as well. We don't know all. if that was a little bit of the disconnect in the area, where it felt like SIU was advertising everywhere but here, coming to our local schools or not. So that's one of the differences between the split. You go to Carbondale for things, but then you go back home. So that has made a little bit of difference in the area, depending on, again, how big or small your community is.
Professor Jackson, I'm going to go to you on the next question here. You recently published research on state tax money, and really, I guess to break it down, it's return on investment for every dollar you send to Springfield. You know, how is that money spent? What do you get back in return? And I think most people in Southern Illinois probably think they don't get much from the state. The state ignores this area, but you've basically found some different evidence on that.
Well, this gets back to one of your themes, which is election 2018, and all elections occur in a context, and a very deeply held belief system in this state, a part of the political culture that goes all the way back, is my area is not getting a fair share. And so I've been here over 40 years. A colleague of mine, John Foster, and I decided to take an empirical look at that. It depends on how you define fair share, perhaps, but one of the most appealing definitions is you send a dollar to Springfield, you get a dollar back, would be breaking even. We in Southern Illinois are doing the best of any region in the state. We get back about $2.81 for every dollar we send to the state. Central Illinois is doing quite all right. They are in about $1.75 on return on what they send to the state. Interestingly enough, the collar counties do least well. They get 51 cents. And the place we love to hate down here the most is Chicago, Cook County. They get back 90 cents. So they're coming a dime short.
Can you talk more about why that is? What does Southern Illinois get for its that return on investment? Where does that money go?
Well, I'd rather talk about downstate, although we are certainly a big part of that. Downstate has 9 of the 12 public universities. They are big takers and needs of the budget. There are 46 community colleges. A couple are in Chicago. The rest of them are downstate. There are a bunch of prisons. I lost track somewhere, but almost all of them are downstate. And many of the prisons are in Southern Illinois. On and on I could go. Plus, Matt knows this better than I, but the school formula helps those who are less property rich, and the new formula is going to do that even better. There are all kinds of ways in which Southern Illinois and downstate benefits from being a part of the state of Illinois. My larger point, however, is we need to quit looking at it as regionalism's the only thing we care about. We need to look at it as we're one big state. We rise and fall together. What helps one area helps all of the state. What hurts one area hurts all of the state. The needs of school kids in many parts of Chicago are exactly the same as the needs of school kids in West Frankfort. And that's the way we need to look at it. And the problem is we have people running for office who continue to divide us by telling us who we ought to fear and hate and be jealous of.
We have about 15 minutes or so left, so if you still have a question, get one of the cards. If you have one of those, you can ask for one in the back there, and we will like to, if somebody has one that would like to ask a question, just hold up your card. They'll come around and get it for you. Let me go to Kyle on the end here. We talked at the beginning where I mentioned coal as what a lot of people think of Southern Illinois. They still believe, you know, the coal industry is the dominant part of the economy here. What is the situation with coal in Southern Illinois, and what might be the future, at least from your perspective?
Sure. Well, obviously, coal is not where it once was back 40, 50 years ago, but there still are coal mines open. In fact, Southern Illinois Power Cooperative burns Southern Illinois coal, and so it is still active, although not to the mass quantity it was before. But you may find traditional uses for coal, you know, having the clean scrubbers to eliminate the harmful components of coal. But then also, you can look at alternative uses for coal. We have a company in the research park that does such. It's a company called Thermaquatica. They actually use coal for different processes and separate their feedstocks, so it's something that's more benign to the environment. And so I think when you're looking at a natural resource like that, you're going to be looking at alternative uses.
Has the area embraced the, you know, the idea, I think was mentioned earlier, the idea of more green energy and alternative energy sources? Is the area doing much of that?
Yes, solar in particular. I know in Carbondale they're putting up a solar farm, and there are other places in addition to the homeowners. And I know one large business in Carbondale, they've gone completely solar.
Lily from Carbondale, I don't know if I got the last name, so I won't try to pronounce it, but she could step up and ask, she has a question for us. And again, anyone on the panel who would like to respond to the question, go ahead.
Okay. You know, with this election that's coming up, what I wondered if you would please discuss the role and the importance that voting for people of good character who will work with opposing parties to make sure that we do get a budget passed the next time in a timely way. Because I feel that, you know, we've talked about the fiscal crisis and we've talked about the effects of this, which are still ongoing. And this is not going away. And anyway, maybe you could discuss that.
John, I guess politics, it'll go to you, I guess.
I vote for what you just said. Yes, that's what we need to do. I endorse that. And your position, but you know, we need people who will tell us the truth and quit playing games and quit shading and pandering to our worst instincts and the worst biases and things that we have that are not going to enhance the political discourse or the rational making of public policy. And that's why John Foster and I did the study, is just, you know, stop already with all the claims about where the money's going, where it ought to be going, and how bad off we are. That, I think, is what you're reflecting, and it's going to take both sides. It's going to take people who are willing to compromise, and mass democracy won't work without compromise, particularly in a separation of power system. So you're right on.
If one of the goals of education is supposed to be creating good citizens, And I hope we agree about that. I had a conversation a couple of years ago when the adults were not playing well together, and you would almost say people were being bullied. And I pointed this out after I was off the air after an interview. I said, and yet they want us in education to teach that those things are wrong and make sure that kids see that and aren't in conflict and find ways to solve conflicts. The adults aren't doing it. And they pointed out, well, education is supposed to be shooting higher. Okay, I agree, but that's part of, you almost want to remind everybody what they learned when they were young, which was to treat people with respect, treat each other better, that we're all in this together, as we said, across the region and across the state, and work toward solutions instead of dividing each other.
Matt, I'm going to come back to you, but before I do that, let me call Nathan Colombo. And while he's making his way up here, Matt, I'm going to ask you a question regarding the budget impasse that lasted for 2 years. It's over. They passed legislation we talked about earlier to help school districts, especially schools like yourselves, with some additional money. Are things okay now, or what's the lingering impact that you're seeing from that impasse?
The lingering impact is one, of course, you could say trying to get back where we were, but with this funding formula, we are trying to also make changes that also needed to be made and do it better. But for the district I'm in now, just getting back to even is where we need to go first, because we have been underwater. And just dealing with the ramifications of, okay, we had years we didn't have barely anything as a music program, an opportunity. We didn't have as many reading teachers as we wanted. We had class sizes that were bigger. Students get one shot through school. So as we gave them less opportunities, now we've got a few years of students who are out in the world, and hopefully they're making it, but we could have done a better job if this had been in place before, and if the adults could have gotten along and come up with a compromise.
Nathan, you had a question.
Absolutely. With new policy governing both hemp and cannabis in the state of Illinois, where do you see Southern Illinois fitting into those developing markets with both agricultural resources as well as educational resources to back up development of industry?
Let me go to our business folks, if any of them want to take that on.
Well, I don't know if everyone saw Governor Rauner's most recent bill that he had signed, but essentially that was a reaction. We have an opioid problem right now, and I think last year 70,000 people died of drug overdoses in the United States, and so certainly that's one area that we need to look at, and I'll defer the hard part for Dr. Jackson.
I think that's Jennifer's question. No.
Well, let me ask this. I mean, I think people think this is the be-all, end-all for the state's problems. That, you know, marijuana, legalizing marijuana, will bring in tax revenue if we do it that way, like other states, and the state will be, you know, extremely well off. But it seems to me it's still a limited market here that we're talking about. This is maybe one possible linchpin to getting the state, you know, some needed revenue and maybe solving some other problems with it. But it's not the be-all, end-all.
It tends to be what we do. That is, it's a well-known phenomenon that we love to tax on what's called the sin taxes. It's liquor, alcohol, cigarettes, gambling, et cetera. Legislators across the country have done that forever because those are popular sources. They are not major sources, and they never will be mainstay sources. They are at the margin. And thus, it's just another stopgap, another Band-Aid. It'll help a little bit, but it won't solve the structural deficit. We have a structural deficit in this state that we've had for 10, maybe 12, 15 years. Right now, it's $1.5 billion in the current budget. We have to do something ultimately about that structural deficit.
So we have a budget. We raise taxes, income taxes.
Well. Wait, we restored the tax base that we had to have.
Sure.
We lost $5 billion on the first day of January 2015 because we gave ourselves a $5 billion tax cut that anybody that knew anything about the budget knew we couldn't afford. So in the new tax bill, we went almost back to, so I like to say, we restored back to where we were, and at that, we still had a structural deficit of $1.5 billion.
All right, so in some ways, additional revenue is going to be needed or some major cuts, which we've just talked about here, about all these things that the state needs to fund and do better, whether it's education, healthcare, things like that. So in some ways, the problem is far from solved, let's just say it that way, going forward, no matter who the next governor is.
Well, we get what we think we want. That is, we want our programs, we want all the programs, but we don't want to pay for them. And so the General Assembly and the governors have been giving us just exactly that for years.
Before we time gets away from us, and we're running down to about 5 minutes or so, is it Jackson that is in the audience? Anna, if you want to step up real quick, and if you can ask your question, we'll try to get a quick answer before we run out of time. Go right ahead.
Thank you, and I want to say, as we sit here today talking about this, on the other side of the city, there is some concern about the Copperswood site, wherein there's contaminated land on the northeast side of Carbondale that has not been proven by the EPA that it's safe, and yet our city still wants to build the solar system in that neighborhood where people are not interested in doing that. And I'm just wondering how far and how long can we sit and talk about things like this and not look at the polarization that exists in this city, which are African-American communities. Same thing happens in education as well. And I do want to know, I wonder if there's money now so that we can have money that will allow some type of reading and math programs during the summer that might be able to help bring our students up to where we expect them to be when we want them to be able to make the same types of scores on those Common Core tests that kids make in larger cities where they have better benefits.
Thank you. And Matt, do you want to take the education?
I'll take that part of that. One of the things about this new funding formula, and part of the things that went with the new Every Student Succeeds Act out of the federal government, is trying to, it's not all supposed to dump into teacher salaries, okay? It's also to get resources in specialized things like that, like summer programs. It's what local districts and local boards of education come up with. It's research-based that fits to help address these problems. Now, that's still going to be paying staff and still being paying qualified staff, but those are some of the things this formula is supposed to help, which as school leaders, we recognize that is just getting the funds to do it, because still yet, especially as lower-performing schools, it takes people, it takes money to be able to staff and do those things.
The other part of the question, does anybody want to weigh in on that or feel comfortable weighing in, knowing enough about it? I guess not. We will, hopefully we can get you a better answer at some point on that. We're sorry about that. Real quick, before we run out of time, something else that was brought up earlier, Jennifer, you brought this up, was about travel. How far people have to travel for healthcare. I think some people don't realize that, maybe even living in Carbondale, just how far some people have to go just to get basic healthcare.
Yeah, I think that transportation is a challenge for many people, healthcare in particular, but also access to jobs, access to other opportunity. We have over the years had some transportation options that are affordable that have limits at county lines. And so if you can imagine having to transition, you know, a mother or grandmother from one transportation service to another at the county line, and maybe, you know, she's in a skilled care facility in one town and her doctor's in the other, and you have to see that she has the right transportation. And just distance, and not, I think we're a driving area, but not everybody has reliable transportation, not everybody has multiple transportation. A lot of times they're sharing of vehicles and things like that. And I want to clarify that when we talk about healthcare, you know, one of the issues in our area and in many areas is not just the physical wellness, but we have a huge deficit of services for mental health. And so we have children showing up undiagnosed or unmedicated that are supposed to be getting the same education as the child sitting next to them that doesn't have those issues. We have people showing up in the workforce that have undiagnosed or untreated mental illness. You know, sadly, if you look at our age-adjusted suicide rates, they're higher in Southern Illinois than the state, and they're higher in Southern Illinois than our nation. And so something is going on, and so we need to find a way to fund screening earlier in life and get those folks from wherever they reside to wherever that limited resource happens to exist.
I appreciate that, and we'll probably have to leave it there tonight. Not solutions to all of these problems, but certainly calling some attention to those. I do want to thank our panel once again. We had Dr. Kyle Harfst. He is the Executive Director at the Office of Economic and Regional Development at SIU. Also Matt Donkin, Superintendent at the West Frankfort Public Schools. Jennifer Olson, President and CEO of the Carbondale Chamber of Commerce. And John Jackson, Visiting Professor, does work with the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute and a long record of service at SIU Carbondale. Once again, thanks to our panel tonight, and if you could give them a hand. Thanks to everyone for coming out tonight. For those listening on air, we're continuing around the state with our 2018 Seeking Solutions Forums, and we'll be continuing through the month of September. I'm Sean Crawford with NPR Illinois and WSIU, and support for the series provided by AARP. Have a good night.